You and I back together again, chatting it up on a busy midweek Wednesday edition, February 28th, 2024, on Connecticut Today. We started off the show with audio highlights of Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim's fourth win over challenger John Gomes. We also chatted with the mayor, who called in about his win. Only in Bridgeport, blogger Lenny Grimaldi broke down the Bridgeport mayoral election for us, while Hearst Connecticut Media columnist and editor Dan Hart dropped by with his weekly Wednesday update.
Well, I guess the fourth time is the charm, right? Well, the first time apparently was second, third, and fourth, but a hearty congratulations to Bridgeport incumbent Democratic Mayor Joe Ganim, who won his fourth go-around last night against challenger and former staffer John Gomes. The numbers here as we have them right now, all the media sources quoting with about 99% of the ballots counted here. This wasn't close, so there's obviously going to be no... you know, there are no great controversies here. One would think the totals as we have them, Joe Ganim 6,356, 6,356. That's about 60% of the votes. John Gomes 4,138. And David Herz with 283. So once again, Ganim 63-56, Gomes 41-38, and Herz 283. So there you go. The machine breakdown. Ganim won the machines 46-35 to 34-79. So once again, the machine count 4,635 for Joe Ganim, 3,479 for John Gomes, and Joe Ganim won the absentee ballots as well, 1,721 to 659. So even if you take into account a margin of roughly about 1,100 or so in the ABs, Joe Ganim still would have won easily because of his advantage at the machines as well. So there you have it. Joe Ganim wins. It took four rounds to do it, but finally this is over. But again, as I mentioned yesterday, yeah, this may be over, but, you know, to me, it only begins. So let's keep an eye on what happens here, or what does, or what may not happen as far as any further protections for people who want the absentee ballot process to be a normal and a fruitful one. Let's take you to both headquarters. Last night, you heard these cuts on WICC. As soon as we had them here, and obviously Joe Ganim pretty happy, one would think, after the fourth win.
If it wasn't clear three times in a row, it's clear today, louder than ever, Bridgeport has spoken.
All right, so Mayor Ganim exulting in the win last night. And he also continued to thank the folks who voted for him.
To everyone who can hear me, they came together and galvanized for the good of the people of the city of Bridgeport and the future of our great city. I humbly thank you.
And once again, the mayor with the easy win last night.
The people of Bridgeport have in a resounding way answered the call for the fourth time in the middle of February. Thank you, Bridgeport.
And, of course, the mayor commenting on the margin, the biggest one so far that he put up in this, the fourth go-round.
Yeah, I think this was a resounding victory. I mean, overwhelmingly, as was the primary, sends a powerful message about the support that we have from the people of the city of Bridgeport. They came out resoundingly four times. I don't know anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world, that you get that in 4 or 5 months.
All right, let's go to the Gomes headquarters now. We had our folks out in the field last night, and John Gomes commenting on the campaign, his followers, and the Ganim victory.
These are the people that were held hopeless. These were the people that, along with Bridgeporters, were unaccounted.
Yes, sir.
And we started to bring about a movement.
That's right.
Yes.
And the movement's not over.
All right. And John Gomes continuing his comments.
We stayed firm on our integrity.
That's right.
Yeah.
We stayed firm on what we believe that this campaign was about.
That's right.
That's right.
It was about to restore democracy. It was about to restore the sense of pride. It was to uplift every citizen of Bridgeport to understand that every vote counts.
That's right.
And today we stand united.
That's right. Yes.
We stand strong. Because we will never give up as long as it's for the progress of Bridgeport and Bridgeporters.
Yes.
All right.
Man, John Gomes continuing to thank his supporters through all four rounds.
I want to say thank you to all of you for giving me the honor, the pleasure to be your leader, to be the captain on that team.
Yes!
The base team.
I appreciate that. And right now, we're just at a timeout.
So it certainly sounds like perhaps John Gomes will continue the fight in 4 years.
To Bridgeport, to all the voters, whether you voted for this side or the other side, I stand with you because we are Bridgeport.
That's right. All right, there you go. So thanks to Chris Williams for editing, cutting all those up, and our folks in the field last night. So again, with about 99% of all the votes counted, Joe Ganim, 6,356. John Gomes, 4,138. David Herz, 283. Those are the official totals with about 99% in the machine vote. Once again, see, there's no controversy here because Joe Ganim won the machines by a little less than 1,200 here. 4,635 to 3,479. And the absentee ballots went to Joe Ganim, too, by a comfortable margin, 1,721 to 659. All right, what do you think? If anything, was this all a foregone conclusion here? Look, it was, this was valuable. You have to take something out of this. Now, as Joe Ganim said there, and I've been saying for weeks, you know, I don't know of any municipality anywhere in the country or anywhere in the world that has had to have one election cycle repeated four times or four different contests in two cycles. Right? I mean, a primary followed by a general election. Has that happened anywhere? I don't know. Nobody's, I guess you could check for it. You know, we now have all this artificial intelligence. Why doesn't AI check it for us? But this really, this has to be kept front of mind. So now, and as I mentioned yesterday, there's about 2 months left in the General Assembly session here. And Governor Ned Lamont and the Secretary of the State, Stephanie Thomas, they say they're working together. The governor's office says he's working with the Secretary of the State's office to come up with suggestions for laws as far as what could be done to just get rid of the funny business. Now, it's interesting. The last three rounds in this whole thing, right? If you look back, I know it's confusing. Get out your scorecard. So the last three rounds of this, the last three rounds of this have gone off smoothly, right? We didn't hear anything about any gross inaccuracies in the first general election or in the second primary or the second general election. I guess the Secretary of the State's office had monitors in here. Everybody was watching it. So let's continue that. Let's come up with some common sense solutions and ideas as the governor says he's working on, as the Secretary of the State says she's working on, and let's put people's minds at ease. Look, if voters are convinced that the process is okay, then they're okay with who wins. right? It's like it's like you know you're betting on a sports game. You take the risk of winning or losing your money. The only thing you're asking for is a fairly officiated game. All right, bottom of the hour coming up. We'll do traffic and weather together and all that, a lot more coming up today. We'll be breaking down the race and all that. But they tell me, and look at this, Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim calling in here to the program. Mayor, good afternoon. How are you?
Good. How are you? Can you hear me?
Mayor, you're coming in 5x5. How are you? Congratulations on last
Great.
Night. Is four rounds enough? We're not doing round five here, are we? No.
I know. I want to thank the people, the voters. People of the city of Bridgeport so much for, as you say, coming out four times. And, you know, it's actually interesting, and I know you analyze this stuff, but greater percentages of people came out to vote. We got a greater percentage of the vote, but even more people participated and came out and vote, both in person and in mail. And I just want to thank them in January and in February on special elections to respond so overwhelmingly. And, you know, it means a lot, and I'm humbled by, again, to be able to continue on as mayor of this great city.
Now, Mayor, people obviously, you know, they've given you the privilege of serving another 4 years, and I know you'll get into all the stuff you want to do for the city. But let's look back at this and say, hey, how can we, because frankly, Mayor, you know it, you hear it, and I hear it from my callers here, there is this sense of what's going to happen next. So do you have any suggestions or anything you might like to see, without getting uber specific, if you don't want to, about how to make sure that we don't have these questions pop up anymore? Because the last three rounds of this seem to go off without a hitch.
Without a hitch, and with compliments from the, I guess it was the oversight of the Secretary of State's office and the assistance of the moderators, who pointed out, in effect, things that needed to be pointed out, I think, all the way around, which were good. I think, in just general terms, the legislature is taking a look. I think they need to put resources behind a commitment to the fundamental of our democracy, which is our voting process statewide. Not just with issues that have come up with irregularities in the process, that's critically important, but also how this modernization and ensuring everything that does every aspect of voter confidence. You know, we shouldn't have a runaway thing nationally with Trump being able to claim, you know, as he did and continues to do, false election results. And that narrative is just not healthy for our democracy. Nor is any narrative that kind of makes people question. I want to say, though, I think in these last few rounds, and what we'd like to see more of is, for mail, and Bridgeport has a particularly large percentage of people that are elderly, you know, some disabilities, maybe physical or and transportation issues. Not everybody has a car.
Mm-hmm.
I know along across Connecticut, it's pretty much, you know, everybody has a car and a big house and all this stuff. You know, that's not what we're living here. And our challenge is, you know, even to get out to vote for some of our seniors or citizens is a bigger challenge. And in the middle of the winter, forget about it. The expectation, thank God we had, you know, good weather. But so I think supervised balloting at a more accessible, even if it costs more.
Yeah.
Then, you know, the personnel, our offices, I want to compliment everybody who was involved in this democratic process, in this election, that worked at the schools tirelessly, our registrar of voters, our town clerk's office. You know, you only hear about it when there's a hitch or a hiccup.
Mm-hmm.
But they worked tirelessly, midnight last night, you know, after each of these cycles impacted them as well. So I just want to thank everyone who does ensure every day the process, and look forward to any way and every way that we can, you know, be on the same page for improvements.
Yeah, finally, Mayor. Yeah, I talked about that a little yesterday, and I think that might be a way to go through if logistically it can be worked out with some of the elderly homes and the senior homes here. You know, the supervised absentee balloting here, it still allows people to vote by AB, but it kind of sets up, here's a word we hear of a lot, Mayor, guardrails, right? You set up a little bit of guardrails,
yep,
to make people have faith in the process.
And the moderator pointed out in one of these cycles, you know, very clearly in writing what you could do and couldn't do, which had been different than the practice generally. Nothing sinister about it, but just different in the practice. And so those type of pointers, as you point out, could be described as guardrails that need to be kind of expressly pointed out. And, you know, I'm glad we had, I think you said this before I got on, but these last three cycles, you know, in months, you could have mistakes just by fatigue with people. You could have mistakes just by trying to do too much. We didn't have that. We had, I think, reviews that were, you know, complimentary by, I think it was a moderator or someone who was involved in the process from the Secretary of State's office, you know, about the local registrar of voters and how diligent they were, and the town clerk's office and how diligently, you know, they operate on, you know, getting hit with how many different things all in one short period of time with deadlines and all that. So my thanks go out to them along with the voters who have tolerated. But, you know, when I called voters, if you don't mind me going on for a minute, I called so many people across the city. And I think I jokingly say half the city has my cell phone number, but I'm almost not really joking. Because I did call on my personal phone, as I told people. And I did tell people that if they had a problem following up, I was calling about coming out to vote and all that. But if something came up that they had my number, I'd ask that they text me. And then I would, you know, I would tell them what I would do. If it wasn't, it would probably go to my chief of staff, Dan Seamus, for attention. And I had a tracker on it myself, so I can make sure that what they brought up, you know, and hopefully this is working, would follow through. But I talked to a lot of people who said that despite the fact that there were going to be another election, they were going to come out and vote. They knew it was important. And, you know, come whatever the term is, hell or high water, they weren't going to miss it. And that was appreciated. It continues to be appreciated by me and everyone involved.
All right, Mayor Joe Gannon. Mayor, thanks. Thanks for calling
in.
You got the number, and don't be a stranger. Thanks. Take care. All right, there you go. Bridgeport Mayor Joe Gannon. All righty, we'll get back to open phones a wee bit later on, shall we, kids, boys and girls, moms and dads, children of all ages, here at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Well, Gannon v. Gomes, round four, went the same way as rounds one, two, and three did. Lenny Grimaldi is here. He usually joins us on Thursday from onlyinbridgeport.com, but we figured, hey, let's do it today while the griddle is still hot. Lenny, what are you going to do now for the next 4 years? Oh, my God.
I'm going to be on the unemployment line. I'm finished. Done.
That's it. You're finished.
I'm going to come to you for a job.
Yeah. Lenny, you're breaking up a little.
It's okay. We got other elections coming up.
Yeah, I know. Lenny, you're breaking up a little. I'm going to have you move around a little bit just to change the signal there. Look, he won again. I guess the margins here at the machines and at the with the ABs. Any thoughts, insights? What'd you hear last night?
Well, I mean, John Gomes said last night that he made history. I guess if you lose four times in 5 months, that's making history at some level. But I think, you know, it's to be expected.
Yeah.
The first one obviously was, you know, close, and you had the ballot snafu. And then the second one where you had the win at Gomes' back, the mayor managed to pull it out. And then the more we got deeper into this election cycle, the better it was for the mayor because he was able to retool his message. To people, and he campaigned, you know, his fanny off. Mm-hmm. And Gomes was really, he was kind of just stuck with the base anti-vote, and he couldn't like open up the, you know, the voter gene pool wider to make a case as a change agent, and that never really happened. So the mayor won the third vote, you know, handily by 12 points, and then with Gomes running out of money, and had no real message for the future. The mayor just piled on. He won by 20 votes, and that's what he wanted. You know, he wanted to put an exclamation point on this, so there was no more questions. He did what he had. He did what he had to do last night, and it's done. And now he can go back governing full time versus campaigning in the winter.
Yeah, and you know, Lenny, I had the mayor on. He called in the first hour, and one thing I did emphasize with him, and he kind of agreed with me. I said, "Listen, after the first round of all these shenanigans and funny business, and there's still the cases pending about this in 2019, you know, when they went to Lenny to rounds 2, 3, and 4, I think the one thing, and you tell me if I'm nuts here, but I think the one thing that people may be able to take them out of this is the last three rounds of this, albeit we had those three rounds because of the funny business in round one, they pretty much went off okay. I mean, this can be done, Lenny, can it not, without the shenanigans?
Yeah, so the last three, the votes two and three and four, there was no question about the outcome of the vote at all. You had some political operatives going back and forth, charges, countercharges, filing campaign finance reports, you know, against each other, or elections complaints against each other. But there was no questioning the outcome of the certified vote, which happened the first time around. So, yeah, you know, it's really strange to vote four times in 5 months. And, you know, this started with the absentee ballot stuff and Judge Clark's decision. And I spoke to a lot of lawyers who feel that Judge Clark's decision is ripe for bad law. I mean, what occurred on that night? And we talked about this past. No one took the stand to say their vote didn't count.
Mm-hmm.
No one took the stand to say their vote, their ballot was fraudulent. Or it was, you know, it was taken away from them. That didn't happen. But you have a situation where you had a bunch of political operatives dropping absentee ballots into these drop boxes. And the judge ruled that the mere preponderance of all of these, ballots that were not handled correctly made it impossible for anyone, the judge, to figure out who won. Now, in a lot of states, like 10 of them, that would be perfectly legal. But the state of Connecticut has these restricted absentee ballots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let me give an example. When I get really old and decrepit, and I got drool coming out of my mouth, and you're to come visit me,
absolutely.
And say, "Hey, Lenny, how you doing today?" And I say, "Uncle Paul, yeah, I'm doing all right, but I've got this absentee ballot here." And I filled it out, and I can't make it to the mailbox. Could you put it in the mailbox for me? And you go, sure, I'll be happy to do that. Well, in the state of Connecticut, that's illegal. Unless you're a cop, unless you're a caretaker, unless you're an immediate family member, that would be illegal. And I think that's ridiculous, how restrictive that is. So I don't know what's going to come out of this. And I listened to your segment on it regarding the state legislature and General Assembly taking some kind of action. I don't know what they're going to come up with in this process, but that whole thing we talked about, to me, that whole trial was very, very bizarre to me.
So, Lenny, is maybe something that was floated in a Keith Lockhart story, Brian Lockhart story from October, and I chatted with the mayor about this. You know, do we then go for now? And you know, again, I'm visiting you 30 years from now. And you tell me, can I do that? And I remember, you know, the year 2024. Say, no, Lenny, don't you understand? Do you remember 2024? Should we nurse, help him? Should we maybe have what they call, a supervised absentee balloting for, you know, certain facilities, elderly housing, nursing homes, so you have designated days to do this on, and there's an observer there from the Secretary of the State's office, and there's one there from the town clerk or the Democratic registrar or the Republican registrar? Because, you know, Lenny, when this happened in 2019 with you-know-who, I remember having a woman on from the League of Women Voters, or the secretaries of the state organization, and I remember her telling me that there are laws there, right, that if there are ABs to be filled out in some of these facilities, there's supposed to be a representative of either or both parties, right, on the premises. Don't we still have that there?
Yeah, I think that's something they'll probably look at, you know, some supervised balloting. But I go back to the ballot boxes.
Yeah.
And those ballot boxes now that were – what this started was you had someone in a sympathizer of Gomes who worked in the police department leaked this information to Gomes. And, you know, he went with it. I don't blame him. But those ballot boxes that both sides stuffed has become kryptonite. I mean, people now know there's cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
And so I don't see this happening anymore with these ballot boxes. So I don't know how you address it, because people know after what occurred, they're not going to go near them. I mean, it's someone who wants to legitimately drop it in, you know, a person filling out their own ballot and wants to drop box. That's what it's for. But the political operatives, no, I'm going to be crazy if I'm going to do that again because it's going to be on camera.
Lenny Grimaldi is the guest, by the way, only in Bridgeport.com, of course, is the blog and the website. So, Lenny, now moving forward here with the mayor's next term, you just think with him it's full speed ahead, touting all the developments for the city onward and upward. What potential, if any, landmines, Vinny, do you see, maybe not politically or otherwise, for the mayor in the next 4 years?
Well, he's got a lot of things teed up that we've talked about. You know, the soccer stadium proposal, you know, housing units downtown, and Steel Point going vertical with housing. There's a number of things that are on the horizon, which he wants to see through. I think the good news for the mayor is he didn't want to go out without at least having a chance of solidifying a legacy, shepherding through these projects that are on the horizon that, you know, will start coming together within the next year or two. I mean, it would have been very disappointing for him if he went out in a loss over this ballot stuff. So he survived that, and I think he's really going to focus on a number of these projects that are teed up right now because he wants to have a legacy of saying, look, I got this done for Bridgeport. That could be again a big quote unquote transformational for the city. Mm-hmm. So he wants to go out on a higher note, and it beats the alternative. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Finally, Lenny, let's cap it off as we always do. Lenny talking about his former boss, Donald John Trump. Mitch McConnell announcing he'll step aside today. And I'm already seeing now on the political buzz sites, well, McConnell's gone. And it is now Donald Trump's Republican Party. And Ronna McDaniel is gone in the RNC. And it's Donald Trump's daughter-in-law here. Does he, Lenny, now control the GOP top to bottom?
He pretty much has a monopoly on it because no one wants to take him on because they recognize the consequences. Some people do. You know, Chris Christie's of the world. Yeah. You know, Nikki Haley she's weighing in harder. And Nikki Haley right now is the only opponent. She's just hanging around hoping for a Hail Mary, I think.
Yeah.
You know, can she peel off a couple of Super Tuesday states, you know, those open primary states, to try to maintain relevance and not, you know, her money is going to probably start drying up, which is going to be a problem. But, yeah, he's co-opted the party. It's now definitely his party now. And, you know, listen to McConnell. He makes Biden sound like a spring chicken.
I know. Oh, Lenny, why do they all hang out? Well, I know it's the trappings of power. It's the adrenaline. And but Lenny, wouldn't it be great if these people were all like 55 or 60 years old maximum? You imagine what we'd be able to get done? Oh my God.
Well, I mean, is that an argument for term limits?
Well, yeah, you know, at one time I've gone back and forth pro and end. Now I'm a hard term limit guy. Lenny, I used to be not. I was one of these guys. Well, you know, we have term limits. They're called elections. Yeah, but when nobody puts in any thought into who they're voting for, Lenny, I guess I don't know. I don't get it.
Yeah, who trusts? Why trust the electorate?
Yeah, Lenny. Thanks. Yeah, I got it. You're breaking up a little. Lenny, thanks. And now with the election, promise me you'll find something to write about other than the elections, okay?
Oh, I'm gonna concoct some kind of conspiracy for another election. I'm sure.
You got to come up with something. Lenny Grimaldi, thanks, my friend. Lenny Grimaldi, only in Bridgeport.com. And, of course, we thank you for that. I do. My producer, Board Op, News Guy, Chris does. Everybody here at Connoisseur Media does as well. Okay, 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Back to open phones to wrap up the show next half hour, but it's a Wednesday. It's the middle of the week. It's coming up on 5:15. And, of course, we're joined at this time every week by Hearst, Connecticut media columnist and editor Dan Haar. Mr. Haar, good afternoon. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great. And you?
I'm living the dream, Dan. Every day I come in here and say it's too late for law school, so I might as well keep doing this.
Did you get picked out of the hat today on the ballot?
No, but tell me about that, because I guess a guy, Dan Haar, who's not in really in the race anymore, is still going to be on the ballot. Is that how this works?
Yeah, that's the way it works. DeSantis, he lucked out. Maybe he should come back and unsuspend his campaign, because he's first on the ballot, apparently, on the Republican primary ballot, where I will be voting as a liberal Republican.
There you go. So how does that so the process actually happen today? Is this what happened?
I think it might have been yesterday.
Okay.
It just got reported today.
Okay.
I vaguely remember. I didn't cover it. It was down in New Haven. The Secretary of the State was down there. Let me just check. But I think it was actually yesterday.
Okay.
But it sort of got slipped through the cracks there. Because it was she did a joint event about the Bridgeport vote, which we'll talk about.
Yeah.
And the ballots, and I think that was yesterday.
Okay.
So that's listen, the bottom line is that these primaries are not the most suspenseful thing in the world after what we've seen in South Carolina and Michigan. Although there's some potential hand wringing in the Republican Party about whether the Michigan results show it.
Yeah.
That those hundred and something, that 30% of voters, will they come back to Trump is a big question.
Yeah, and of course, Dan, over the years covering this stuff as I have, our primaries never mean anything, but boy, do the guys and gals from both sides of the aisle like to descend on suburban Hartford and Fairfield County. And the other day, the First Lady was here on the shoreline outside New Haven. They'll come for those big checks, though. Boy, won't they do that.
Yeah, and a certain blogger / columnist even reported that George Logan is bringing in Mike Johnson, the new speaker.
I saw that. Yeah, yeah.
That's going to kill him. That's going to kill him.
Yeah. Oh, because I mean that's ready made fodder right there. That's on a silver platter.
I mean, I've already said, and I like George Logan, but I've already said this in this cycle that his chance was the last time. Right, both on both the supply side and the demand side. On the supply side, meaning who he's fighting against. Johanna Hayes, Representative Johanna Hayes, is a much better candidate this year because she finally, I think, but I'm not sure of this, finally figured out that she has to be a team player as a Democrat.
Yeah.
Which it took her 8 or 10 years, but she figured it out, and she seems to be playing in the sandbox more this year. And as on the demand side, as far as what he brings to voters, his whole shtick the last time was, no, I'm not in the pocket of the Speaker McCarthy. I'm going to be my own man.
Yeah.
But now he's got the Speaker coming to raise money for him, and that's going to be hard to turn him down when the Speaker says, hey, George, can you vote for this? Can you vote for that?
So yeah.
I think that really, really will hurt him.
Now, we have a big, hospital merger going on here, Dan. Which hospitals and what's up with that?
Yes. Nuvance Health. Is the 5 years ago they took over Western Connecticut Health,
okay,
which includes the four hospitals in Connecticut on the western side: Norwalk, Danbury, New Milford, and Sharon. Sharon, of course, is the hospital where they're having the battle with the state over whether they can close their maternity operation. And so they got bought out by another company in Poughkeepsie, which is a hospital chain in the Hudson Valley. That hospital chain renamed itself Nuvance, N-U-V-A-N-C-E, and they've been operating happily or not. Obviously, all hospitals are struggling under the modern economics of low reimbursement for Medicaid.
Yeah.
So now they are merging with Northwell, which I didn't realize this. Northwell is a whole bunch of hospitals, including Long Island Jewish,
yes,
North Shore, Lenox Hill, Maimonides, And they are saying they're the largest hospital chain in New York State, which is saying a lot.
Yeah, they've got their they've got their names on a couple of athletic facilities on Long Island, which is why they've got name recognition up here. Yeah, absolutely.
That's right. So it's So it's a big name, Northwell, and I happen to have been born in one of their hospitals. So that's a matter of great human pride.
Have they put a plaque on the room like they did with the room when George W. Bush was born in New Haven? I guess there's a plaque on that room. Is there a plaque on the room?
No, but I think they fumigated it. I'm not sure. In any case, there's no reason to believe that this will be a controversial merger.
Okay.
There's not. And on its face, it is. In other words, it's not where you see controversy is in the same market. One hospital chain buying another set of hospitals or a hospital that's in its market, mm-hmm. because the general belief is that prices go up when there's less competition. But this is the same four hospitals that belong to Company A that are now going to belong to larger Company B, and larger Company B has a lot of money to put into, hopefully, we hope, Connecticut.
Yeah.
So it, from at least from a standpoint of Connecticut, it should not be a controversial merger.
Dan Harr is the guest, Hearst Connecticut Media. All right, let's move along to something I know that you and I have discussed a couple of times, UConn funding, and, you know, they're acting like the school's going to crumble into a pile of soot, ash, concrete, and steel. You think the governor gives them something or everything? What do they want, another $40 million or $45 million, something like that?
They are going to get – they want $47
mm-hmm.
and the governor has offered them zero – not zero, but his budget is an increase for them over last year.
Yeah.
But it also, they have less pandemic money, ARPA money.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like a decrease. So they're saying they need 47 plus some money. I think it's 16. Previously, they were asking for about 50 for the UConn Health,
mm-hmm.
previously known as the UConn Health Center. So let's take that out of the equation because that's healthcare. And they're looking for 47, and I'm guessing they'll get 25, 20.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they always split the difference, but the question is the difference between what and what. The news this week is that it really isn't going away. They've got those students riled up.
Yeah.
And you're heading into March Madness. It's always an ugly juxtaposition because the governor – last year I wrote a column about it. The governor went to the Final Four with the president of UConn and sat with her or near her.
Yeah.
And they were, you know – together, and they went to presumably events together, but meanwhile they were in the peak throes of fighting over what at the time was $200 million, and of course, as always, they split the difference.
Mm-hmm. Dan Harr is with us. Before we get to the Bridgeport thing here, round four, the server's wages bill, getting rid of the tipped wage. You and I have talked about this. I've mentioned this to a couple of servers where I spend at least one or two nights a week in Wallingford the other night. They're not happy. But does this look like, Dan, it's got a little more legs under it this time than the last time or not?
I don't think so.
Oh, no. Really?
I don't think so. Mm. I think there are a number of labor bills that may pass. I think you're more likely to see an expansion of paid family leave, perhaps, or some of the other labor stuff. The problem with this passing is that I hate to put it exactly this way, but they really don't have a groundswell. They're presenting it as a grassroots movement of servers, but they don't have a groundswell of servers. Servers didn't crowd into the Capitol yesterday.
No.
It was all advocates for the union. My guess, it fails again.
And
it gets further than last year.
And it doesn't help, Dan. And you know, you and I know how these things work. Perception is reality. You're right. Number one, there's not 500 servers from Connecticut's restaurants showing up there. But the people that are pushing this, and they make no bones about it, they're a group out of Chicago. And most people, Dan, see that and go, well, okay, like you say, they're not Connecticut servers.
Well, that's right, and I still have the book they gave me last year, One Fair Wage, sitting right on my desk here, next to my feet, which are up on the desk as we speak. I know that's way more information than you wanted.
No, that's listening. That's good.
The point I want to make about this is that I think they have a really, really legitimate concern in restaurants that are lower end.
Yes.
Because servers in, you know, a diner in pick a town, any town that's not West Hartford, Fairfield or Greenwich, Right. Those servers really are struggling to make the minimum wage, and they really do sometimes come up short because, yes, the law says you are entitled to every bit of the minimum wage. If you don't make it in tips, the restaurant has to make it up to you. But it's difficult to go to the restaurant owner when you see a restaurant isn't doing well and say, hey, I didn't make my wage. They do. They should if they're right.
Sure.
But it's, you know, it's, there are stories about those servers being given worse shifts and so forth. So it becomes the broader issue that the movement is saying is very legitimate, and mm-hmm. that is there is an over-reliance on tips. And that means that servers have to behave in certain ways and do certain things to get tips, which are not part of what we want to see in American commerce in 2024. As you probably know, in Europe, there are service charges, mm-hmm. and the tips are much, much smaller.
Yeah. And finally, Dan, now Joe Gannon is now 4-0 against John Gomes. Gomes 0-4 in baseball. If you strike out four times, that's known as the Golden Sombrero. So Joe Gannon gets another 4 years, but the bigger issue, Dan, I've been saying over the past couple of days, is where do we go now with these calls to tighten up the ballot situation, including the absentee ballots? Now, rounds 2, 3, and 4 of this, including last night, they went off pretty smoothly. No finger pointing,
We think so. We think so. Yes. By the way, I thought the Golden Sombrero, I thought that was just John Sterling of the Yankees. Is that universal?
That's universal. Striking out four times in the game. Yeah.
Oh, it is. Okay, because he talks about it, and I never heard another announcement.
No, that's it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but in any case, I went out and hung out with John Gomes, and as a result of spending a couple of hours with him, a nice enough guy, but I could see where this was going, and I correctly predicted to within 150 votes the margin, which was 2,250, a big margin. And mm-hmm. as you saw, the mayor, Gannon, increased his margin with each race. In answer to your question, the problem isn't will there be reform or not. The Republicans are trying to portray this as the Democrats sitting on their hands, not doing any reforms. The problem is that the Democrats want one set of reforms and the Republicans want another. And so it is incorrect. The Republicans are right that there's a problem. It is incorrect for them to say, as they continue to say, including the new Republican Senate leader, Senator Harding, that the Democrats are sitting on their hands doing nothing and blocking reform. It's just a different set of reforms. And another big question that you didn't ask is, why the heck did Lamont, Hines, Blumenthal, and Murphy all show up in Bridgeport? I'm not sure about Hines. The other three definitely showed up.
Well,
in the last week of the
election. Why not?
What in the world are they doing that for?
You know.
Because 364 days a year they try to distance themselves from Joe Gannon, and one day they go with their arms around him. I don't think it works that way.
Apparently it does. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media editor and columnist. Dan, as always, great insights. Have a great weekend. We'll talk next week. Thank you, sir.
We'll be in touch. Take care.
Take care, and keep those feet right on that desk, my friend.